I've sworn not to love, sir. But do you? Kylar walked out the door. As Kylar stepped into the hall, the Count said, You know, I pray for you too, Kylar. Chapter 33. The whorehouse had closed hours ago. Upstairs, the girls slept on fouled sheets amid the brothel smells of stale alcohol, stale sweat, old sex, wood smoke, and cheap perfume. The doors were locked. All but two of the plain copper lamps downstairs had been extinguished. Mama Kay didn't allow her brothels to waste money. There were only two people downstairs, both of them at the bar. Around the man's seat were the remains of a dozen smashed glasses. He finished the 13th beer, lifted the glass, and threw it onto the floor. It shattered. Mama Kay poured Durzo another beer from the tap, not even blinking. She didn't say a word. Durzo would speak when he was ready. Still, she wondered why he'd chosen this brothel. It was a hole. She sent her attractive girls elsewhere. Other brothels she'd bought had been worth fixing, but this one huddled deep in the Warrens, far from main roads in the maze of shacks and hovels. This was where she'd lost her maidenhead. She'd been paid 10 silvers, and had counted herself lucky. It wasn't high on her list of places to visit. I should kill you, Durzo said finally. They were the first words he'd spoken in 6 hours. He finished his beer and shoved it along the bar. It slid several feet, fell over, rolled off the bar, and cracked. Oh, so you do have the power of speech? Mama Kay said. She grabbed another glass and opened the tap. Do I have a daughter, too? Mama Kay froze. She closed the tap too late, and beer spilled all over. Vonda made me swear not to tell you. She was too scared to tell you, and then, when she died... You can hate Vonda for what she did, Durzo, but she did it because she loved you. Durzo gave her a look of such disbelief and disgust that Guinevere wanted to hit his ugly face. What do you know about love, you whore? She had thought that no one could hurt her with words. She'd heard every whore comment in the book and had added a few besides. But something in how Durzo said it, something about that comment coming from him, struck her to the core. She couldn't move. She couldn't even breathe. Finally, she said, I know if I'd had the chance for love that you had, I would have quit whoring. I would have done anything to hold on to that. I was born into this chamber pot of a life. You're the one who chose it.
What's my daughter's name?
So that's it? You bring me here to remind me how many times I got fucked in this stinking hole? I remember. I whored so my baby sister wouldn't have to, and then you came along. You fucked me 5 times a week and told Vonda that you loved her. Got her pregnant. Left. I could have told her that much was a given. That part of the story so predictable it's not even worth repeating, is it? But you weren't just any John, no. You got her kidnapped, too. And then what? Did you go after her? No. You showed exactly how much you loved her, called their bluff, didn't you? You always were willing to gamble with other people's lives, weren't you, Durzo? You coward! Durzo's glass exploded against the keg behind her. He was trembling violently. He pointed a finger in her face.
You! You don't have any right. You would have given it all up for love? Whore shit! Where's the man in your life now, Gwyn? You don't whore anymore, so there's nothing for a man to be jealous of, right? But there's still no man, is there?
Do you want to know why you're the perfect whore? For the same reason there's no man, because you don't have the capacity for love. You're a cunt. You suck everyone dry, and you make them pay you for the pleasure. So don't give me that bleeding heart. I did it to save my sister, horseshit. It's always been power for you. Oh, sure, there are women who whore for money or for fame or because they don't have any other options. But then there are whores. You might not fuck anymore, Gwyn, but you always will be a whore. Now, what is her name?
He bit off each word like moldy bread.
Uli,
Guinevere said quietly.
Ulysandra. She lives with a nurse in the castle.
She looked at the beer she was holding in her hand. She didn't even remember filling it. Was this what Durzo reduced her to? A submissive little... She didn't even know. She felt like she'd been eviscerated, that if she looked down, she'd see ropes of her own intestines coiled around her feet. It took all of her strength to spit in the beer and set it on the counter with even a shadow of nonchalance.
"Well, it's tough to be a victim of circumstance," Durzo said.
His voice had that killing edge on it.
"You aren't...
You wouldn't kill your own child." Not even Durzo could do that. Could he?
"I won't have to," Durzo said. "They'll kill her for me."
He picked up the beer, smiled at Guinevere over the spit, and drank. He finished half the beer at a gulp and said,
"I'm leaving. It smells like old whore in here."
He poured the rest of his beer onto the floor and set the glass carefully on the bar. Kylar woke 2 hours before dawn and briefly wondered if death would be too high a price to pay for a full night's sleep. The correct answer, however, was unavoidable, so after a few minutes he dragged himself out of bed. He dressed quietly in the dark, reaching into his third drawer where his wet boy grays were folded, as always, and reaching into his ash jar to smear his features black. In the past 9 years, he'd learned to compensate for not having the talent. When Blint was in an optimistic mood, which was increasingly rare, he praised Kylar for it. He said that too many wet boys relied on their talent for everything, and that he kept his mundane talents honed for unpredictable situations. In the bitter business, unpredictable situations were the norm. "Besides," Blint said, "if there's almost no noise of a footstep to cover in the first place, you don't have to use as much of your talent to muffle it." Sometimes Kylar's adaptability showed itself in more spectacular ways, but mostly it was in these little things, like putting his grays in the same dresser, the same way, every time he washed them. At least he hoped it was his adaptability and not Blint's mania for organization infecting him. Seriously, what was it with the man's locking locks 3 times and spinning knives and the garlic and the night angel this and night angel that? The window opened silently, and Kylar crept across the roof. Years of practice taught him where he could walk and where he had to crawl to be unheard by those below. He slipped over the edge of the house, dropped onto the flagstones in the courtyard, and vaulted off a rock to grab the edge of the wall. He raised himself to peek over the edge, saw no one, pulled himself over the wall, and then moved stealthily up the street. He probably could have just walked. Sneaking wasn't really necessary once he got out of sight of the Drake's home and until he got within sight of the herbiary. But it was a bad habit to get into. A job is a job. It isn't done till it's done. Another of Blint's pearls. There. Thanks. Tonight, it wasn't just Blint's ingrained discipline that kept him creeping from shadows to shadow making the 2-mile walk in the herbiary take almost an hour. Tonight, Jarl's words kept going through his head. You have enemies. You have enemies. Maybe it was time he moved out of the Drake's house, for their safety. He was 20 years old, and though, of course, he didn't have the income of a noble, Blint was more than generous with his wages. In fact, Blint didn't really care about money. He didn't spend much on himself, aside from the infrequent binges on alcohol and rent girls. He did buy the best equipment and ingredients for poisons, but what he bought, he kept forever. With what he made for each kill and the frequency with which he took jobs, Blint had to be wealthy. Probably obscenely wealthy. Not that Kylar cared. He'd adopted much of Blint's attitude. He gave Count Drake a portion of his wages for Eline, and still had plenty left over. He kept some in coins and jewels, and split the rest between investments Mama Kay and Logan made for him. It meant nothing to him, because money couldn't buy him anything. His cover as a poor country noble, and his real work as a journeyman wet boy, kept him from living a lifestyle that would attract attention. So, even if he had wanted to spend his money, he couldn't afford to. He could move out, though. Rent a small home further south on the east side, at the edges of one of the less fashionable neighborhoods. Blint had told him that if you bought the cheapest house in a neighborhood, no matter how expensive the neighborhood, you were invisible. Even if your neighbors noticed you, they'd take pains not to notice you. Then, Kylar was at the shop. The Sakage had long had an arrangement with herbalists in the city. The herbalists made sure they kept certain plants on hand that weren't strictly legal, and the Sakage made sure that the herbalists' shops were never burglarized. The Crown knew about it, but was powerless to stop it. Goodman Aileyep's herbiary was frequented by rich merchants and the nobility, so he had refused to keep illicit herbs openly in his shop, fearing that such defiance in the very face of authority might not be ignored. He'd been able to refuse the Sakage, but no one refused Master Blint. Goodman Aileyep supplied Durzo with the rarest herbs. In return, Master Blint made sure no one else in the Sakage so much as went near his shop. It fell to Kylar to gather the necessaries and drop off the money, which he was doing tonight. The benefit to running these errands wasn't only that he learned the trade or that he established relationships with the people who would supply him in the future, it was also that he could build his own collection. An elaborate collection like Master Blint's took years and thousands or even tens of thousands of gunders to build. The bad part was losing sleep. It didn't do for a young noble to sleep until noon unless he'd been out carousing with his friends. So, even though he wouldn't get home until almost dawn, Kylar would have to wake with the sun. He grumbled silently, remembering a time when sneaking through the streets of Cenaria at night had been fun. The back door of his shop, as always, was locked. Goodman Aileyep kept good locks on his doors, too. Though he'd never met him, they only wrote notes. Kylar felt he knew Goodman Aileyep, and the man was a strange one. With Durzo Blint's protection in the Sakage, the man could have safely left his doors wide open. No one in the city would dare steal from him. But, as Blint said, a man's greatest treasures are his illusions. For all the man claimed to hate teaching, he seemed to have an aphorism for every occasion. Kylar selected the proper pick and anchor from the kit on the inside of his belt, and he knelt in front of the door and started working. He sighed. It was a new lock, and from Master Prods, the best locksmith in the city. New locks, even if they weren't high quality, always tended to be tighter, and if losing an anchor wasn't the end of his world, it was still irritating to break one. Kylar raked the pick over the pins. 4 pins, two of them a little loose. That meant it was the work of one of Prod's journeymen, and not the master himself. In 10 seconds, he turned the anchor, bending it, and the door opened. Kylar cursed, silently. He'd have to get another new anchor. Then tucked his tools away. Someday he was going to have to commission a set of Mysteril picks and anchors like Master Blint had, or at least one anchor. Mysteril would flex, but never break. But it was more expensive by weight than diamonds. Goodman Aliep's claim that his business was an herbiary wasn't an idle boast. It had 3 rooms. The large, comfortable shop with labeled glass jars for the display of herbs, a tiny office, and the herbiary in which Kylar stood. The little room was humid, and the wet, fecund odors were almost overwhelming. Checking on the progress of some fungi, Kylar was pleased. Several lethal mushrooms would be ready within a week. Mushrooms were one kind of plant Goodman Aliep could grow with impunity in his shop. Lethal varieties were indistinguishable from edible mushrooms to anyone except trained herbalists and, of course, trained poisoners. Treading carefully so he didn't step on any of the boards that creaked, Kylar moved through the rest of the herbiary, judging the plants with a practiced eye. Kylar lifted the 3rd plant box in the 2nd row and saw 6 bundles carefully packed in individual lambskin pouches. He lifted them out and checked that each was what he had ordered. 4 bundles for Master Blint, and 2 for himself. Kylar put the herbs in the pack, secured flush against his back under his cloak, and put the purse with Aliep's money into the little space. He set the planter back in position. Then, something felt wrong. In the blink of an eye, Kylar drew 2 short swords. But he didn't move a step. The feeling of wrongness continued. Not something wrong of itself, but just something here, and now, and close. There was no sound. There was no attack, just a slight pressure, as of the softest possible touch of a finger. Kylar focused on the sensation, even as his eyes scanned the shop and his ears strained to hear the slightest sound. It was like a touch, but it was pressing past him toward the lock on the back door clicked home. He was trapped. Chapter 34. Restraining an impulse to run to the door and fling it open, Kylar stayed utterly still. No one was in the room with him, of that he was certain. But he thought, yes, he could hear someone breathing in the shop. Then he realized that it was more than one person. One was breathing quickly, shallowly, excited. The other was breathing lightly but slowly, not tense, not excited. That scared Kylar. Who could ambush a wet boy and not even be nervous? Afraid of losing all initiative, Kylar moved slowly toward the wall that separated the herbiary from the shop. If he was right, one of the men was standing just on the other side of it. Sheathing a short sword, to be silent he had to do it so slowly that it was painful. Kylar then drew out the Siurin hand-and-a-half sword he carried in a back scabbard. He brought the tip of the blade close to the wall and waited for the slightest sound. There was nothing. Now he couldn't even hear the excited man breathing. That meant the excited one must be on the other side of this wall, while the calm man was further. Kylar waited. He trembled with anticipation. One of the men on the other side of the entry was a witch. Were they with the Caladorans Jarl had warned him about? Kylar pushed the thought out of his head. He could worry about that later, Whoever they were, they had trapped him. Whether they thought he was Master Blint or just a common thief didn't matter. But which one was the witch? The nervous one? He wouldn't have thought so, but the feeling that had pressed past him and had locked the door had seemed to come from that side. A board creaked.
Fear! Back!
The man further away from Kylar shouted. Kylar rammed his sword through the finger-thick pine. He yanked the sword back as he charged through the entry. He burst through the curtain and launched himself off the doorpost and over the sales counter toward the man he'd tried to stab. The man was on the ground, rolling over as Kylar took a slice at his head. He was huge, bigger even than Logan, but proportioned like a tree trunk, thick everywhere, with no definable waist or neck. For all that, even on his back he was bringing up a sword to block Kylar's blow. He would have blocked it, too, if Kylar's sword had been whole, but half of Kylar's Siouran blade was lying on the ground by the man, sheared off with magic a moment after he had rammed it through the wall. Finding no sword where he expected it, the big man's parry went wide as Kylar attacked from his knees. Without the full weight of the blade, Kylar brought his half-sword down faster than the big man could react and stabbed for his stomach. Then, Kylar felt as if his head were inside the sound bow of a temple bell. There was a concussion, pitched low but focused, as if a cornerstone had fallen two stories and landed an inch from Kylar's head. The force blew him sideways through one shelf of herb jars and into a second, sending them crashing down underneath him. Then there was nothing but the light flashing in front of Kylar's eyes. His sword was gone. He blinked, vision slowly returning. He was face down on the floor with a shattered shelf, lying amid the remnants of broken jars and scattered herbs. He heard a grunt from the big man, and then footsteps. Kylar kept still, not having to fake much to appear incapacitated. A few inches from his nose, he was slowly able to make out some of the plants. Pronwy seed, Ubdal bud, Yarrow root. This shelf should have, and there it was, near his hand. Delicate tuntun seed, ground to powder. If you breathed it, it would make your lungs hemorrhage. The footsteps came closer, and Kylar lurched, spinning to one side and flinging tuntun powder in an arc. He came to his feet and drew a pair of long knives.
Enough, Shadow Strider!
Air congealed around Kylar like jelly. He tried to dive away, but the jelly became as hard as rock. The two men regarded Kylar through the cloud of tuntun seed, hanging frozen in the air. The blonde mountain folded meat slab arms across his chest.
"Don't tell me you expected this, Dorian,"
he growled at the other man. His friend grinned.
"Not much to look at, is he?"
the mountain asked. The smaller man, Dorian, wore a short black beard under intense blue eyes, had a sharp nose and straight white teeth. He reached forward and took some of the floating tuntun powder between two fingers. Black hair, lightly oiled, blue eyes, pale skin. Definitely Caladoran.
He was the witch. Don't be a sore loser, Fia. Things would gone badly for you if I hadn't broken his sword.
Fear scowled.
I think I could hold my own. Actually, if I hadn't intervened, right now he'd be wondering how he was going to move such a large corpse. And that was without his talent.
That got an unhappy grunt. The smaller man waved a hand, and the tuntun powder fell to the ground in a tidy pile. He looked at Kylar, and the bonds holding him shifted, forcing him to stand upright with his hands down at his sides, though still holding the knives.
"Is that more comfortable?"
he asked, but didn't seem to expect a reply. He touched Kylar's hand with a single finger and stared into him as if his eyes were cutting him open. He frowned.
"Look at this,"
he said to Fi'ir. Fi'ir accepted the hand Dorian put on his shoulder and stared at Kylar the same way. Kylar stood there, not knowing what to say or do, his mind filled with questions that he wasn't sure he should give voice to. After a long moment, Fi'ir said,
"Where's his conduit?"
"It almost seems shaped, like there's a niche for..." He exhaled sharply.
"By the light! He ought to be..."
"Terrifying, yes," Dorian said.
"He's a born Kakarifer. But that's not what worries me. Look at this."
Kylar felt something twist in him. He felt as if he were being turned inside out. Whatever he was seeing, it scared Fi'ir. His face was still, but Kylar could almost feel the sudden tension in his muscles, the slight tang of fear in the air.
"There's something here that resists me,"
Eyes said.
"The stream's winning. The shadow cloaked makes it worse."
"Let it go," Fi'ir said. "Stay with me."
Kylar felt whatever had been pulling him open drop away. Though his body was still bound in place, Dorian rocked back on his heels, and Fi'ir grabbed his shoulders in meaty hands and held him up.
"What did you call me?"
"Who are you?" Kylar demanded. Dorian smirked, regaining his balance as if by the force of good humor alone.
"You ask who we are, wearer of names?"
"It's Kylar now, isn't it? Old Jaren punning,
I like that. Was that your sense of humor or blints?"
At the startled look on Kylar's face, he said,
"Blints, apparently."
Dorian looked through Kylar again, as if there were a list inside him that he was reading.
"The Nameless, Marathi, Queller, Specs, Kylar."
"Even Kage. Not terribly original, that."
"What?" Kylar asked. This was ridiculous. Who were these men?
"Sakage means Lords of the Shadow," Dorian said. "Thus, Kage means shadow. But I don't suppose that one's your fault. In any case, you ought to be more curious. Did it ever occur to you to wonder why your peers had common names like Jarl or Bim, or slave names like Dollgirl or Rat, and you were burdened with Azoth?"
Kylar went cold. He'd heard that witches could read minds, but he'd never believed it. And those names... that wasn't a random list. "Your witches. Both of you." Fi'ir and Dorian looked at each other.
"Half right," Dorian said.
"A little less than half, really," Fi'ir said.
"But I was a witch," Dorian said. "Or, more properly, a Meister. If you ever have the misfortune of meeting one, you may not want to use a slur."
"What are you?" Kylar asked.
"Friends," Dorian said. "We've made a long journey to help you. Well, not only to help you, but to help you and..."
"And we've come at a great personal cost and greater risk,"
Fi'ir interrupted, looking at Dorian sharply.
"We hope you have no doubt that we could kill you, that if we wished you harm, we could have already done it,"
Dorian said.
"There are more types of harm than just killing. A wet boy knows that," Kylar said.
Dorian smiled, but Fi'ir still looked wary. Kylar felt the bonds release him. That unnerved him. They'd seen how fast he could move, and yet they released him. Armed.
Allow me to introduce us, Dorian said. This is Fir Kusat, one day to be the most renowned swordsmith in all Midcryo. He is Vaisana, and a blade master of the second echelon.
Great. And you? Kylar asked.
You won't believe me.
Dorian was enjoying this. Try me.
I am Sar Siurin, and Hoth Salar, and once a Verdmeister of the 12th Shura.
Impressive. Kylar had no idea what those were.
What should be important to you is that I'm a prophet. My name is Dorian, Dorian said with a native Caladoran accent. Dorian Ursul.
You were right, Fir said. He doesn't believe you. Aside from carelessness, the only things that could kill wet boys were other wet boys, mages, and witches. In Blint's estimation, witches were the worst. He hadn't neglected Kylar's education.
Let me see your arms, Kylar said.
Ah, so you know about the Veer, Dorian said. How much do you know about them?
Dorian bared his arms to the elbows. There were no marks on them. I know that all witches have them, that they grow in proportion to the witch's power, and their intricacy shows the witch's level of mastery, Kylar said.
Don't do it, Dorian, Fir said. I'm not going to lose you over this. Let's tell him the words and get the hell out of here.
Dorian ignored him. Only men and women who are talented can use the Veer. It's easier to manipulate than the talent, and more powerful. It's also terribly addictive, and if one dare speak in moral absolutes, which I do, it's evil, Dorian said, his eyes bright, holding Kylar.
Unlike the talent, which can be good or bad like any talent, it is in itself evil, and it corrupts those who use it. It has proven useful to my family to have all Meisters marked, so they are. My ancestors never saw any reason to be marked ourselves unless we so chose. The Ursuls can make their Veer disappear at will, so long as they aren't using it.
Blint must have skipped that lesson, Kylar said.
A pity it is, too. We're the most dangerous Verdmeisters you could possibly imagine.
Dorian, just tell him the words. Let's...
Fear, Dorian said. Silence! You know what to do.
The big man obeyed, glowering at Kylar.
Kylar, Dorian said. You're asking a drunkard who's quit drinking to take just one glass of wine. I'll live in misery for weeks for this. Fir will have to watch me constantly to see that I don't slip away to that madness, but you're worth it.
Fir's mouth tightened, but he didn't say a word. Dorian held his arms out, and a shimmer passed over them. As Kylar stared at them, it looked as if veins deep in the man's arms were wriggling, struggling to get to the surface of his skin. Then, rapidly they rose all together. Dorian's arms turned black like a million fresh tattoos were being inked over each other, layer knotted on layer, each distinct. Interlocking with those below and above, darker over lighter, with darker still coming in above, it was beautiful and terrible. The Veer swelled with power and moved, not just with Dorian's arms, but independently. It seemed that they wanted to burst free of the confines of his skin. The darkness of the Veer spread to the room, and Kylar was sure it wasn't his imagination. The Veer were sucking the light from the room. Dorian's eyes dilated until the cool blue irises were tiny rims. A fierce joy rose in his face, and he looked 10 years younger. The Veer started to swell, crackling audibly. Fir picked up Dorian like most men might pick up a doll and shook him violently. He shook and didn't stop shaking. It would have been comical if Kylar weren't too scared to move. Fear just shook and shook until the room was no longer dark with power. Then he set Dorian down in a chair. The man groaned and abruptly looked frail and older once more. He spoke without raising his head.
"I'm glad you're convinced, Shadow Strider."
It had convinced him, but Dorian couldn't know that.
"How do I know it wasn't an illusion?" Kylar asked.
"Illusions don't suck light. Illusions," Fear said. "He's just being stubborn, Fear. He believes."
Dorian glanced at Kylar and quickly looked away. He groaned.
"Ah, I can't even look at you now. All your futures."
He squeezed his eyes shut.
"What do you want from me?" Kylar asked.
"I can see the future, Nameless One, but I am only human. So I pray that I can be wrong. I pray that I am wrong. By everything I've seen, if you don't kill Durzo Blint tomorrow, Kalador will take Cenaria. If you don't kill him by the day after that, everyone you love will die. Your Sakage Count, the Shinga, your friends, old and new, all of them. If you do the right thing once, it will cost you a year of guilt. If you do the right thing twice, it will cost you your life."
"So that's what this is? All this is just a setup so I'll betray Master Blint? Did your masters think I would buy it?" Kylar said.
"Oh, you learned a lot about me. Must have cost you a fortune to buy all that information." Dorian held up a weary hand.
"I don't ask you to believe it all now. It's too much all at once. I'm sorry for that. You think now that we are Kalidorans and we want you to betray Blint so that he can't stop us. Maybe this will convince you that you're wrong. What I beg of you above all else is that you kill my brother. Don't let him get the Kakari."
Kylar felt as if he'd just been stung.
"The what?"
"The ear," Dorian said. "Say the words we came to say."
"Ask Mama Kay," Fear said.
He shook his head. "Wait, what? Ask her about the Kakari?"
"Ask Mama Kay," Fear said.
"What about your brother? Who is he?"
"If I tell you now, you'll lose when you fight him."
Dorian shook his head, but still didn't look at Kylar.
"Damn this power. What good is it if I can't tell you in a way you'll understand? Kylar, if time is a river, most people live submerged. Some rise to the surface and can guess what's going to happen next, or can understand the past. I'm different. When I don't concentrate, I detach from the flow of time. My consciousness floats above the river. I see a thousand, thousand paths. Ask me where a leaf will fall, and I couldn't tell you. There are too many possibilities. There's so much noise, like I'm trying to follow a drop of rain from the clouds to a lake, then over a waterfall and pick it out in the river 2 leagues downstream. If I can touch someone or chant rhymes, it gives me focus. Sometimes."
Dorian seemed to be looking through the wall, lost in reverie.
"Sometimes," he said. "Sometimes when I transcend the river, I start to see a pattern. Then it isn't like water. It's a fabric, made up of every insignificant decision of every peasant, as much as it is of great decisions by kings. As I begin to comprehend the vastness and intricacy of that skein, my mind starts to pull apart."
He blinked.
and he turned his eyes to Kylar. He squinted, as if even looking at him caused him pain. "Sometimes it's merely images, totally unbidden. I can see the anguish on the young man's face who will watch me die, but I don't know who he is, or when that will be, or why he'll care. I know that tomorrow a square vase will give you hope. I see a little girl crying over your body. She's trying to pull you away, but you're too heavy. Away from what, I don't know."
Kylar felt a chill. A girl? When? Was it Elena Drake?
I can't tell. Wait.
Dorian blinked, and his face went rigid.
Go. Go now. Ask Mama Kay!
Fi'ir threw open the front door. Kylar stared from one mage to the other, stunned at the abruptness of his dismissal.
Go, Fi'ir said. Go!
Kylar ran into the night. For a long moment, Fi'ir stared after him. He spat. Still staring into the depths of the night, he said,
"What didn't you tell him?"
Dorian let out a shaky breath.
"He's going to die. No matter what."
"How does that fit?"
"I don't know. Maybe he's not what we hoped."
Chapter 35. Kylar ran, but doubt ran faster. The sky was lightening in the east, and the city was showing its first signs of life. The odds of running into a patrol were small, especially because Kylar knew better than to run on the roads past the rich shops that somehow saw patrols more frequently than roads with poor shops. But if he did run into guards, what would he say? "I was just out for a morning walk with dark gray clothes, illegal plants, a small arsenal, and my face smudged with ash?"
"Right."
He slowed to a walk. Mama Kay's wasn't far now anyway. What was he doing? Obeying a madman and a giant? He could almost see the veer rising from Dorian's arms, and it turned his stomach. Maybe not a madman. But what was their peace? The only people Kylar knew who did things just because they should were the Drakes, and he figured that they were the exception to the rule. In the Sakage, in the court, in the real world, people did what was best for themselves. Fi'ir and Dorian hadn't denied that they had other motives for coming to Cenaria, but they certainly acted like he was the most important thing. They'd acted like they really believed he would change the course of the kingdom. It was madness. But he had believed them. If they were just liars, wouldn't they try to tell him how great things would be if he killed Blint? Or were they just that much cleverer than most liars? It seemed that by what Dorian had said, that Kylar was going to lose everything no matter what he did. What kind of fortune-teller told you that? Still, Kylar found himself jogging again, and then running, startling a laundress filling her buckets with water. He stopped at Mama Kay's door, and suddenly felt uneasy again. Mama Kay stayed up late, and woke early every day, but if there was one time of the day that he could be sure she'd be in bed, it was right now. It was the only time of day that the door would be locked.
"Damn it! Would you just make a decision?"
Kylar rapped on the door quietly, berating himself for being a coward, yet deciding, all the same, that he would leave if no one answered it. The door opened almost immediately. Mama Kay's maid looked almost as surprised as Kylar was. She was an old woman, wearing a shift, with a shawl around her shoulders.
"Well, good morning, my lord, if you aren't a sight. I couldn't sleep. I just kept on thinking that we'd run out of flour for some reason, though I checked it just last night. For some reason, I couldn't get it out of my mind that it was all gone. I was just walking past the door to check it when you knocked. Oh, by the 12 nipples of Erixula. I'm chattering like a daft old ninny."
Kylar opened his mouth, but a word wouldn't fit in the cracks of the ex-prostitute's rambling, edgewise or any other way.
"Time for a swift blow to the head and a heave into the river, mistress," I tell her. And she just laughs at me. I do wish I were young. If only so I could see the look on your face like I used to get. Once these old sacks would make men stand up and take notice, you'd walk right into a wall because you couldn't take your eyes off. It used to be that the sight of me in my nightclothes, of course, I didn't wear old ladies' rags like this, neither, but if I wore the kind of stuff I used to, I'm afraid I'd scare the children. It does make me miss the...
Is Mama Kay awake?
What? Oh, actually, I think so. She hasn't been sleeping well, poor girl. Maybe a visit will do her good, though I think it was a visit from that Durzo that's got her knickers in such a bunch. It's hard at her age, going from what she's been to being like me. Almost 50 years old she is. It reminds me.
Kylar edged past her and walked up the stairs. He wasn't even sure the old woman noticed. He knocked and waited. No response. A sliver of light peeked through the crack along the sill, though, so he opened the door. Mama Kay sat with her back to him. Two candles burned almost to nubs provided the only illumination in the room. She barely stirred when Kylar came in. Finally, she turned slowly toward him. Her eyes were swollen and red, as if she'd been up all night, crying. Crying? Mama Kay? Mama Kay? Mama Kay, you look like hell. You always did know just the thing to say to the ladies. Kylar stepped into the room and closed the door. It was then that he noticed the mirrors. Mama Kay's bedside mirror where she put on her makeup, her hand mirror, even her full-length mirror, every one of them was smashed. Shards twinkled feebly from the floor in the candlelight. Mama Kay, what's going on here? Don't call me that. Don't ever call me that again. What's going on? Lies, Kylar, she said, looking down at her lap, her face half concealed in the shadows. Beautiful lies. Lies I've worn so long I don't remember what's beneath them. She turned. In a line down the middle of her face, she'd wiped off all her makeup. The left half of her face was free of cosmetics for the first time Kylar had ever seen. It made her look old and haggard. Fine wrinkles danced across the once delicate, now merely small and hard, planes of Guinevere Kirenna's face. Dark circles under her eyes gave her a ghostly vulnerability. The effect of half of her face being perfectly presented and the other stripped was ludicrous. Ugly. Almost comic. Kylar covered his shock too slowly, not that he could ever hide much from her, but Mama Kay seemed satisfied to be wounded. I'll assume you're not here just to stare at a sideshow, freak. So what do you want, Kylar?
You're not a sideshow.
Answer the question. I know what a man with a mission looks like. You're here for my help. What do you need?
Mama Kay, damn it! Quit!
No, damn you! Mama Kay's voice cracked like a whip. Then her mismatched eyes softened and looked beyond Kylar.
It's too late. I chose this. Damn him, but he was right. I chose this life, Kylar. I've chosen every step. It's no good switching whores in the middle of a tumble. You're here about Durzo, aren't you?
Kylar knuckled his forehead, put off track. He could read the look in her face, though. It said, "Discussion over." Kylar surrendered. Was he here about Durzo? Well, it was as good of a place to start as any. He said he's going to kill me if I don't find the silver kakari. I don't really even know what it is. She took a deep breath. I've been trying to get him to tell you for years, she said.
Six Kakari were made for Jorsan Alkesti's six champions. The people who used the Kakari weren't mages, but the Kakari gave them mage-like powers. Not like the feeble mages of today, either. The mages of 7 centuries ago. You are what they were. You're a Kakarifer. You were born with a hole in your talent that only a Kakari can bridge. Mama Kay and Durzo had both known all of this, and they were only telling him now? Oh, well, thanks. Can you direct me to the nearest magical artifact store, perhaps one with a discount for wet boys? Kylar asked. Even if there were such things, they've been either collected by the mages, or they're at the bottom of the ocean or something. Or something. Are you saying you know where the silver is?
Consider this, Mama Kay said. You're a king. You managed to get a Kakari, but you can't use it. Maybe you don't have anyone you trust who can. What do? You keep it for a rainy day, or for your heirs. Maybe you never write down what it is because you know that people will go through your things when you die and steal your most valuable possession, so you plan to tell your son someday, before he takes the throne. In some way or another, though, as kings so often do, you get yourself killed before you can have that talk. What happens to the Kakari? The son gets it.
Right. And doesn't know what it is. Maybe even knows it's important, that it's magical. But like you said, if he ever tells the mages, they'll take it from him, or from his heirs sooner or later. So he keeps it, and he keeps it secret. After enough generations pass, it becomes just another jewel in the royal treasury. By the time 700 years go by, it's switched hands dozens of times, but no one has a clue what it is. Until one day, Kalador's god-king demands a tribute that includes one particular jewel, and a remarkably stupid king gives the very same jewel to his mistress.
You mean?
Kylar said. I just found out today that Niner gave Lady Jadwin the silver Kakari, the Globe of Edges. It looks like a small, oddly metallic jewel, like a diamond with a silver tint to it. It also happens to be one of Queen Nalia's favorite jewels. She thinks it's lost, and she's furious. So, tomorrow night, someone the king trusts, I don't know who, will be sent to get it back. The Jadwins are having a party that night, so tomorrow, the Kakari will be exposed. No royal guards, no mages, no magically warded treasury. Lady Jadwin will either be carrying it, or it will be in her room. Kylar, you need to understand what's at stake. The Kakari supposedly choose their own masters, but the Kaladorans believe they can magically force a bond. If the God King succeeds, imagine a havoc a God King would wreak if he could live forever. It made prickles go up the back of Kylar's scalp. You really mean this, don't you? Have you told Durzo?
Durzo and I...
I'm not too inclined to help Durzo just now. But there's more, Kylar. I'm not the only one who knows this. Anguish twisted her features and she looked away.
What do you mean?
Kalador has hired someone to get it. That's how my spies found out in the first place. Supposedly the job is a smash and dash.
Supposedly?
They've hired Hugh Gibbet.
Nobody would hire Hugh for a smash and dash. The man's a butcher.
I know, Mama Kay said. Then who's his debtor?
Take your pick.
Half the nobles in the realm will be there. Your friend Logan has accepted his invitation. Perhaps even the prince will be there. Those two do seem to be inseparable for all that they are night and day to each other.
Mama Kay, who's your spy? Can you get me an invitation?
She smiled mysteriously. My spy can't help you. But I know someone who can. In fact, despite my best efforts. You know her, too.
Chapter 36. Kylar had walked up to men in broad daylight within paces of the city guard to kill them. He'd crawled under tables while a cat clawed him as guards searched the room for intruders. He'd had to break into a vat of wine and hide inside it, as a noble's wine taster had picked out an appropriate bottle for dinner. He'd waited a yard from a fully stoked oven after he'd poisoned a stew while a cook debated with himself on what spice he'd added too much of to make it taste so strange. But he'd never been this nervous. He stared at the door, a narrow servant's entrance, in dismay. He was a beggar today, come to beg a crust. His hair was lank and greasy, smeared with ash and tallow. His skin was tough and brown, hands gnarled and arthritic. To get to that door, he had to make it through the guards at the estate's tall gate.
"Oi, old man,"
a stumpy guard with a halberd said.
"What you be wantin'?"
"I heard my little girl is here, Miss Cromwell. I hoped she might find me a crust, is all."
That woke up the other guard, who had only given Kylar a cursory glance.
"What say you? You're related to Miss Cromwell?"
The protective air around the man, who must have been nearly 40, was palpable.
"No, no, she's not mine," Kylar protested, scraping a laugh across his lungs. "Just an old friend."
The guards looked at each other.
"You're gonna go find her and bring her out here at this time of day with the goings on tonight?"
Stumpy asked. The other shook his head, and with a grumble, started patting Kylar down gingerly.
"Swear I'll get lice off of one of Miss Cromwell's strays one of these days." "I knew it, but she's worth it, isn't she?" "You're not so magnanimous when you're the one patting the beggar, Bert." "Ah, stuff it." "Go on, kitchen's that way," the older guard told Kylar. "Bert, I'm lenient with you. But if you tell me to stuff it one more time, I'll show you the business end of my boot."
Kylar shuffled to the kitchen, favoring a stiff knee. The guards, for all their talk, were professionals. They held their weapons like they knew what to do with them, and though they hadn't seen through his disguise, they hadn't neglected their duty to search him. Such discipline boded ill for him. Though he took his time walking and memorizing the layout of the estate grounds, the walk wasn't nearly long enough. The Jadwins had been dukes for 5 generations, and the manse was one of the most beautiful in the city. The Jadwin estate overlooked the Plith River and directly faced Cenaria Castle. Just north of the estate was East Kingsbridge, which was ostensibly for military use, but it was rumored to be used more often for the king's nocturnal liaisons. If Lady Jadwin really was the king's mistress, the Jadwin estate was perfectly placed for easy access. The king also kept the duke running all over Mitkrayu on diplomatic missions that everyone but the duke knew were pure pretense. The manse itself was set on a small central hill that allowed it to overlook the river, despite 12-foot spiked walls that bordered the entire property. With a trembling hand, he masked as a palsy, Kylar knocked at the servant's entrance.
"Yes?"
The door opened, and a young woman wiping her hands on an apron looked at Kylar expectantly. She was a beautiful woman, maybe 17, with an hourglass figure that even through a servant's woolens obviously would have been the envy of any of Mama Kay's rent girls. The scars were still there. An X on her cheek, an X across her full lips, and a loop from the corner of her mouth to the outside of her eye. The scar gave her a permanent little grin, but the kindness of her mouth eased the cruelty of the scar. Kylar remembered how her eyes had looked, swollen grossly. He'd been afraid she would never see out of it, but her eyes, both of them, were clear and bright brown, sparkling with goodness and happiness. The doll girl's nose had been broken to mush,
and Eileen's wasn't completely straight, but it didn't look bad. And she had all her teeth, of course, he realized. She'd been young enough that she'd only lost small teeth in the beating.
Oh, come in, Granny.